Succession number 10657, reel 28.
I think you were saying that one of the deficiencies in the training at Cabrit was that they didn't really foresee snags and work out solutions to them.
Yes, I think so. I don't think that it would have demoralised the troops all that much if they had been told that there would be occasions, for instance, when an LCA would run onto some sort of obstacle some way out from the shore, in which case they should have been told that they had got to get out. They had lifebelts after all, and walk ashore or something like that, that they should have known that there might be that eventuality. So
these chaps doing the instruction at Cabrit, you mentioned the Navy, presumably they were Army.
Mainly Navy, actually, because the whole thing really was mainly at Cabrit. It was to do with the landing craft. I mean, so far as the taking out the position on the beach and breaching the minefield and advancing inland was something which we'd done before. At other places during the war, so we didn't need to have anybody to tell us how to do that, really.
Had any of these naval officers taken part in an amphibious assault in action?
I don't know. The only one they could have taken part in, of course, would have been the first army landings in Africa. They were amphibious, weren't they, some of them? I doubt very much whether they would have got anybody down to Cabrit as quickly as that, you know. And other than that, there was only Dieppe, wasn't there? So we are possibly talking about something that was really only in the sort of on paper stage.
Still being developed by experiments.
Yes.
Did they change any of the procedures during your training? You know, did you notice that they worked out new ways of doing things at all?
No, I don't think so.
So they'd already got their doctrine worked out?
Yes. I think it was a pretty set. We weren't there all that long, actually.
Can you remember how long it took?
Well,
Cabrit.
We completed the training at Cabrit on June the 6th, in actual fact. And we moved to Cabrit on the 22nd of May. So we really weren't there very long.
About a fortnight.
And that was really long enough, I think, for them to tell us what they could about, you know, the sort of support they could give us and all that sort of thing, type of craft, and the use of those craft. But they only had LCA there that I can recollect. The LCI, getting onto the LCI, came later, but that wasn't Cabrit.
You mentioned that you went on from dredger to a brigade exercise. I think that was called Duchess.
Oh, yeah, no, that was Exercise Duchess, yes.
Did that differ in any way from dredger, apart from the scale of the...
No, I wouldn't say that. No, I don't think so. I mean, a brigade, you just do your thing as though you were on a battalion within the structure of the brigade. It was simply that, you know, as you get bigger and bigger, It gives more, shall we say, experience to the supporting arms and other people rather than the actual infantry.
So your part then was to get on the LCA and then get off it and onto the beach.
That's right.
And did it go much beyond getting off the beach?
Well, yes. I mean, once you've got to go through the minefield. And then if you've got an objective that is some way inland, you've got to reorganise and start moving on that objective.
And this was all practised at Cabrit?
Yes, that was all practised.
Did the LCA take a complete platoon? Wasn't that the idea?
A little bit more than that, actually. They carried 35 men, and a platoon was about 30 by the time you got the platoon runner and the signaller and all that sort of thing in. So an LCA was capable of carrying somebody else, for instance, like a forward observation officer or a gunner OP or something like that, or a couple of REs. And this all had to be worked out at a later stage, very carefully indeed, as to exactly who took up the available space in the various craft. It was a terrific logistics exercise, actually.
Was there a sort of strict an order of priority in leaving the...
Leaving the main ships?
Leaving the LCA. When you actually went ashore from the LCA, was the platoon numbered, and did they have to go in sequence of numbers?
Well, everybody knew what stage they'd got to go. Probably you would have your centre, chaps in the centre, going out first, and then you would follow with the left hand and then the right hand side. I mean, there would have been a drill worked out for that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it wasn't a situation where when the LCA beached everybody charged up the front to get out at the same time, because that would have simply jammed everything up. So there would have been a drill, definitely. Okay, so having completed the training at Cabrit, on June the 6th we were taken in tank landing craft down the canal to Suez, to a tented camp under a most formidable looking escarpment, where we had all the facilities we required for range practices, cliff climbing, and for several days the companies settled in and were able to do quite a lot of work on the ranges. But we were only there for about 3 days, because we went by train to Port Tewfik, and we went on to a trooper, one of the real troopers that had been a troop ship actually before the war, the Dunera, D-U-N-E-R-A, for a full-scale invasion exercise in the Gulf of Aqaba for both 5 and 50 div. Now that took us 2 days through the Red Sea to get down to Aqaba Bay. And Aqaba was, I don't know what Aqaba's like these days, but it was an absolute hellhole, and was known, in fact, in a rather more complimentary term, as the backside of the Red Sea. And it really was an awful place, sweltering hot. And how we carried out the exercises there that we did have to carry out, I don't know, because the heat really got to people. Very, very bad indeed.
Can I just go back to a minute about the shooting on the ranges? What sort of shooting would you do on the ranges if you...
Rifles, Brens, two inch mortars, grenades. Throwing grenades into at something or other in a pit. As I say, rifles, Brens, small arms pistols, 3.8 Smith and Wessons, which we had, and 2-inch mortars. But I say we were only there for a few days, and I think during those few days we would have just spent most of our time actually on the ranges doing one or other of those.
And what sort of ranges would you be shooting at with the rifle, say, and the brand?
Well, the sort of things you have down at Bisley, you know, with targets stuck up so many yards away, and then you walk over to see what you've hit when you've finished firing. Very similar to rifle ranges over here, I would say.
Did you have any ranges with moving targets or snap shooting facilities?
No, not there. Not there, I don't think. That would have been more... that sort of training would have come in more in the sort of house-to-house fighting or street fighting. But I can't recollect that we had any moving targets in Benghazi, actually, before Maris.
So it's just the straightforward static bullseye target.
Yes, that's right. That's right, yes. And the grenade throwing was simply lobbing a grenade and getting it fairly close to the target you wanted it to be at. I mean, you could be 20 yards out quite easily on either side. So there was quite a bit of accuracy, actually, in throwing a grenade with an overall movement, getting it to land where you wanted it to land. Of course, there was the odd occasion when one didn't go off or something, And then you had a hell of a job to explode it, and, you know, firing just about everything you've got at it until it eventually went off, because, believe you me, nobody was particularly keen to walk forward and pick it up and throw it again. I think we're we're up to about June the 12th now, then, where battalion headquarters group and company commanders went ashore at Aqaba for a signals exercise, which was entirely to do with communications, and was simply the practicing of signalling between battalion headquarters and companies, and getting that running fairly efficiently. And this was a preliminary to an exercise called Bromyard, which started at 3 o'clock in the morning. And the object of that exercise was to give the Corps practice in the capture of a port, Aqaba, and the establishment of a bridgehead. So it was a pretty big exercise, actually, which involved both 5 and 50 div and a brigade of an airborne division, which went in first. Now, General Montgomery watched Bromyard, which was pretty realistic, because the enemy was represented by our own troops firing Bren guns into carefully sighted weapon pits, which is quite a usual thing these days, but was quite unusual to us in those days. There were also quite a lot of charges dug in and exploded when the troops were fairly near them, to represent shelling by coastal defence guns. And I think it was the very first exercise we'd had which was very, very near to the real thing. As I say, it went on from about 3 o'clock in the morning, finished at 10:30 the next day, and the battalion marched to a camp at Aqaba, not far from the beaches, where we then had 2 miserable hours of one of the Khamsin winds, which completely enveloped the whole camp and the battalion in stinging sand for a couple of hours.
Did the troops appreciate this new realism?
Oh yes, I think so. Yes, I think they never. It could be a bit frightening sometimes if you started chucking these little battalion grenade things around without being careful. They could do quite a bit of damage. They were red devils, they were called, actually, and we used to use them quite a lot after this and during this for training. That you had to be careful.
Superior thunder flash.
Well, a very, very noisy one. a thunder flash, all right, yes. And they were dug down and exploded when the troops were fairly close to them, but not so close that they were dangerous. They were only blowing sand up in the air anyway, but they did go off with a mighty bang, and the sort of thing, it was done really to make troops appreciate the fact that this was what might happen as they started advancing up a beach. We had a pep talk from General Montgomery that evening, in actual fact, from a building the size of a cinema that had been erected at Aqaba. It wasn't a tent, it was an actual building. And I think that was very much appreciated by everybody, that he had come along to talk to us after the Bromyard exercise. But that was the first of many visits we were going to get from senior officers, which I think made the troops realise that, you know, somebody really cared up there and were going out of their way to make sure that we knew what was going on.
What was the actual form of Bromyard then? Was it?
Well, Bromyard in fact was to give the Corps practice, 13 Corps, which was the 2 divisions, 5 and 50 div, bearing in mind that they got to capture the port of Syracuse on Sicily. The idea here was to capture a port, and Aqaba was the target, and the establishment of a bridgehead,
So although we didn't know it, Bromyard was very close to what the Corps was going to have to do.
Like a rehearsal.
A rehearsal, more or less, but we had an even more detailed one at a later stage. But Bromyard was the first that was, had we but known it, a pretty good indication of where we were going.
Was the ground at Akbar anything like the ground?
No.
It wasn't?
No, it was all very flat and featureless and a horrible place.
What about the sea? Was the sea calm when you landed?
I think so. I can't remember. Yes, it pretty well protected there, I think, in the Gulf, actually. I don't think we had any problems with bad weather there. Had we have done, it might have made us a little bit more aware of the fact that if we had them, when we stopped off Sicily, they could be very serious, which in fact did turn out to be the case. We left Akbar on the 15th of June, so we had only been there, in fact, about a couple of days, and went back to Suez. And when we got back to Suez, we were ferried out to the Ruys, R-U-Y-S, which was our Dutch ship for the actual invasion. We were ferried out to her in landing craft, and we spent several days practicing embarking in LCAs and in LCIs, landing craft infantry, by day and night. Now, the battalion wasn't an assault battalion, so therefore only one of the companies in the 8th Battalion went ashore in LCAs, and that was D Company. The rest of the battalion went in an NCI, an LCI. Now, these were American-built craft, and they carried about 200 men, which meant that they could get two companies in, plus one or two of the supporting arms and people. But we did do quite a lot of practice on the boat. The boat we were actually going to use, it's a question of knowing who moved first, which gangways and alleyways they used, and in what order, and all that sort of thing. We also practiced there getting from the Ruys by ladders down the side of the Ruys and onto the LCI. But here again, there was no bad weather, no rough weather of any sort. So it was a fairly easy exercise. You just went down a ladder and you stepped backwards. Very, very different indeed when we had to do the real thing. When the... I'll tell you about that later on, but sufficient to say at this stage that when we had to do the real thing, because of the rough weather, it took us four times as long to get from the Ruys into the landing craft as it had taken when we practiced at Suez.
Had you done any training on using scrambling nets?
We didn't actually use. We didn't use scrambling nets. We used these
ladders.
I thought we did at one stage, but we didn't. We used the ladder. Had we been in the scrambling nets, I think it would have been an utter disaster had we used those, because nobody would have got down. I mean, they went down fairly quickly on the ladder, but with the ships bucking about as they were off Sicily, I think it would have been chaos. I don't think we had any training in the scrambling nets either. Not even at... because at Caput it had been all LCA. So here we are at Suez, and we finished this training on the Ruys, and we went back to the camp under the escarpment. The training was very tough there.
This was the place with the ranges.
Yes, both before and after Akaba, and it was intensive training. The escarpment was climbed every morning, and it was a very steep escarpment before breakfast. A man from headquarter company slipped and was killed, and the medical officer was busy most days with injuries, some of which were serious. So it was a pretty tough climb. But it was invaluable training, because it all served to toughness up for Sicily, and I think this was acknowledged by the troops, who really took to it very well indeed. The heat was almost unbearable by day, and there were usually dust storms in the afternoon, so one way and another it was a pretty miserable period. We did a lot of work on the ranges. Bren's rifles, mortars, anti-tank guns. Piats had made an appearance by then, the infantry anti-tank weapon. There was plenty of ammunition available. Unfortunately, one of my B Company NCOs was killed, right outside the company tent, actually, when he was demonstrating a Piat. This was the new platoon anti-tank weapon, just out from the UK. He wasn't the only casualty. A lieutenant named Johnson, who's in C Company, who'd actually been blown up at Marith, and the shell blew him several feet into the air. He was evacuated, suffering from severe shock, loss of memory, but he came back to the battalion and was killed by a misdirected burst of Bren gun fire. Now, you may think that all sounds very inefficient for two people to be killed, but there was a lot going on every day, and there were lots of troops involved and a lot of firing and everything. And in fact, we had a percentage allowance for fatalities at this camp under the escarpment, which I think if you had that sort of thing today, there would be the most tremendous outcry. But I remember that all I had to do, as this Piat blew this chap's head off, actually, I had to walk over to just over to battalion headquarters and simply tell the adjutant that we'd had a fatality.
How did that happen?
Noted down. Well, somehow or other, he got round in front of the damn thing. And he was the... And this NCO got in front of it where he shouldn't have been, because nobody was ever supposed to get in front of any weapon of any sort. Even if it wasn't loaded, they weren't supposed to. But he did, and it went off. And that was that. It's a pretty horrible experience, actually, for everybody. But I think the interesting thing there is that we did have this allowance.
And that's something new, wasn't it?
Well, it was new to us. We'd not had it before, but we needed it, with the escarpment and with Johnson. I mean, there are three fatalities that I can think of. I think there may well have been more. Could have been four or five. And I would have imagined that they would have gone down as killed in action.
This climbing of the escarpment, was it formal rock climbing with people roped together, or was it scrambling up?
No, it was scrambling up, actually. I mean, you had to be careful. You could get up, but it was pretty frightening, actually, because it was very steep and it was a long drop if you did miss your footing. So
was it a rock escarpment, or was it sand?
No, it was a sort of a it had protruding rocks, bits of stone that could be used as handholds and that, you know. But it was mainly a rock sand escarpment, I suppose. But it didn't do us any harm. It stood us in good stead for later on when we were going up that onto the high ground off of the beaches at Sicily.
What did you think of the Piat generally as a weapon?
Piat was a good weapon. Yes, very good. If it was used, you know, you got a good Piat operator and it could do a lot of damage. It was certainly far better than the boys' 303 anti-tank rifle, which really wasn't very much use, which we'd had since the beginning of the war. If I remember rightly, the Piat was a very it was a very manoeuvrable weapon too. It was something that you could handle quite easily and carry around, I think.
The next thing was the 2-pounder, wasn't it?
2-pounder anti-tank gun. And the 6-pounder. And, of course, eventually the 17-pounder.
But at this stage, wasn't the 2-pounder the infantry?
Yes.
Anti-tank weapon.
Yes, that's right. Our own anti-tank platoon had 2-pounders. I think they eventually got 6-pounders. I'm not sure, but they certainly had 2-pounders. And that was a separate platoon in the battalion. There wasn't a 2-pounder gun automatically issued to each platoon. or each company.
But each platoon did get a Piat.
Oh yes, yes, it was a platoon weapon. Yeah.
What sort of range could you get out of a Piat then, do you think, if you had a good man using it?
I'd have thought 100 yards, something like that. 60 to 100 yards to get a really good sort of result from it. 100 yards a bit too long and a bit too far, I think. I'd have thought more like 60 yards actually. But they were an accurate weapon and they were easy to use, and they were very popular, I think. Right, so I think on the 24th of June, General Montgomery visited us again. This time it was the Britannia Cinema in Suez Transit Camp. In the morning, he spoke to the senior officers of 13 Corps, and in the afternoon to all officers of 50 Div. And the next day, he visited the DLI Brigade, as well as all the other units in 50 Div. Had a great reception, you know, the usual business of crowding round his car. And in fact, the Div was really at the top of its form and very much appreciated this visit from Monty, bearing in mind that we were then in a sealed camp. The camp at Suez was sealed. We couldn't get out.
How much did you know at this stage about what you were going to be doing? Did you have any idea?
We didn't know it was Sicily. I had absolutely no idea at all. The destination was unknown except to senior members of Div HQ, brigadiers and unit commanders of the assaulting brigade. They were the only people who knew. That included Bob Liberal, because we were part of the assaulting brigade, but nobody else did.
Didn't the secrecy and so on give rise to rumours?
Oh no, tremendously, yes, a terrific lot. We had this final exercise on June the 26th, which was a land exercise, and there was an imaginary coastline, and the roads had been taped, to represent the beaches and the high ground which the division was to assault. It was really a massive sort of sand table, in actual fact. The assembly and maintenance areas were marked with notice boards, and we all did a final walk over the course. And it gave us a rough idea, I suppose, of the fact that the size of the coastline involved, that would be the divisional responsibility, where the roads were, and where the beaches were that we would be going in on. And what this led to, I remember meeting a very old friend of mine, Captain Mingard, who was in the Queen's Royal Regiment and had been responsible for me joining the Territorials, and he and I were talking about this, and more or less equal in popularity was Rhodes, Crete, Sicily and Sardinia. All of them were thought of possibilities, and one or two chaps were actually betting on the Balkans. So I remember standing around and we were all talking about where it was, but nobody had any idea that it was definitely going to be Sicily. Nobody at all. That wasn't the finish, actually, of the visits, because the following day, and we're still in Suez in the sealed camp, the new divisional commander, General Kirkman, visited the 8th Battalion and talked to the officers. So that was another pep talk. 2 days later, we went in landing craft out to the Rice. We sailed up the Suez Canal next day. Security was still very good, and still only Bob knew where we were going, Bob Liberal. And we had an old Dutch captain on the Rice, marvellous old boy, rather like one of the characters from Punch magazine. And we used to pump him, because we thought he ought to know where we were going. And all he would say was,
"Nobody tells me noddings on this ship. I'm just a captain." You love the old chap.
And of course, the troops on the when we went past Cabrit, all the navy chaps who'd given us lectures and training were standing on the jetty there and waving as we went by, which we thought was rather nice. The AK-AK gunners on the side of the canal, of course, they were all shouting out, "Why don't you get some sand in your shoes before you go back to Blighty?" Because they all thought we were going home. And of course, our chaps couldn't shout back. And they by now were in extremely good form, because the Rice was a comfortable ship, as troopers go, having been a pre-war passenger ship. And of course, there were no flies. It wasn't sweltering hot. There was no sand. And we were jolly glad to have got away from everything like that. When we got to port side, we were 5 days opposite the town, and of course an absolutely magnificent target. All the 50 div ships were anchored there. Other ships joined us, and there was much more congestion at side than there had been at Suez. If the Germans had bombed us at port side,